believe assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here with you. I got a few emails regarding the handgun course I'm putting together for next spring, so I would like to address those now. It's going to be a 3-day handgun course, which you would get the same amount of training in the 3 days with me that you would get in any 4 or 5 days worth of training anywhere else. It's going to be a foundational sort of class. I don't want to say basic, because basic by no means is going to be the skill level you have when you leave. We're going to start with a foundational setup. How to hold your gun, how to stand, where to move, how to get things going, how to clear malfunctions from your gun, how to load them, how to reload them, how to keep them running. Essentially, how to hit your target with good, solid marksmanship principles at distances known to be common when it comes to defensive shooting situations, such as what you would have as a concealed weapon holder, what distances you could expect to be in a gunfight, historically speaking, which, quite honestly, is not very darn far. So we're going to keep it within reason. We're not going to go out to 15 or 25 yards in areas that you're just not going to expect. We will develop the skills that if you use the same principles, you'll be able to hit at any distance. I routinely am able to hit cold out of the holster at 100 yards on a plate of steel with a handgun because I use the same principles at 100 as I would at, say, 3 yards or 5 yards. Anyhow, so those are the things you'll learn. There's not going to be an excessive amount of sit down in a classroom and take notes and listen to somebody yak on and on and on for an hour and a half or 2 hours about nonsense. This is how I run my courses. There are times where you take a break. You sit down, you load your magazines, you drink water, and you get your gear back together. During those times, that is when you're going to hear segmented bits of things such as Jeff Cooper's color code of mental awareness. Things such as the different decisions that you need ethically, morally, legally to actually be able to justifiably shoot someone else. And it's all pretty straightforward stuff. So that sort of thing gets handled in pieces as we go along in a nice flowing motion throughout the course. So you have more time to actually develop your skill so it can get done in 3 days. And it's not 3 12-hour days. It's going to be like an 8-to-5 sort of a thing, like a 9-hour day plus a break for lunch, a decent, reasonable break for lunch. So that's the way it's going to be. We'll start out again with the fundamental things. You'll be able to present out of a concealed holster and get good, solid hits at conversational distances and even a little beyond by the end of the 3 days. And you will have the skill level beyond that of probably the vast majority of the law enforcement officers wherever you live. They just have not had this type of training. Generally what it is it's a hand-me-down sort of a thing. If you can ask any law enforcement officer that you know that when they do shooting drills, if they load their semi-automatic guns with 6 rounds and they do any drills that are shoot 6, reload, and shoot 6 more, then they have had absolutely antiquated training, because that was stuff from back in the 50s and 60s when all the cops carried revolvers. You're not going to receive that here. More to come after the break, guys. Stay tuned. This is Bill Carnes on 2A Radio.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
So it's been very famous that in Switzerland, which is a neutral country, every home has a gun in it. And essentially every able-bodied male up to the age of, I believe, 45, correct me if I'm wrong, you can call in, I believe 45 years old, serves either actively or as a reservist in their military. And every home has a gun. Until now. Actually, I guess every home will still have a gun. Listen to this story. Despite the vehement protests of many of Switzerland's states, which are known as cantons, the lower chamber of the nation's Federal Assembly, which would here be the House of Representatives, voted to strip its citizens of gun rights, not by registering or confiscating firearms, but by outlawing the storing of ammunition in the homes of citizens. According to the Liberty Zone, the move was led by Switzerland's small but vocal and powerful socialist minority. And apparently, it was a leading woman's magazine who aided the socialists in the cause. Now let's take a break and talk about this for a minute. Small, vocal, and powerful. I have to tell you, folks, that the organized few will get much, much further than the disorganized many. And that has shown true so many times. I'll give you a perfect example of something that we've all experienced over the last several years. Having gay rights literally shoved in our face and forced to accept all of this garbage and this gay marriage thing and all of that. Because the organized minority of gay rights activists have been so vocal and so vehement in their message that you couldn't ignore them. And the masses, who really don't care in the slightest for any of this, were not organized at all, and there really was no response. Continuing, having failed at attempts to take the guns themselves from homes and store them in government facilities, the new law takes aim at ammo rather than the guns. The Swiss are still allowed to possess firearms. They will not be allowed to possess the ammunition to use them. Okay. Another pause. I've said this. I'm going to repeat it. If there is the Chicago case going in front of the Supreme Court, and I have not read the briefs, I don't know if ammunition is in there. But sometime, some way or another, the deal on restricting or eliminating ammunition needs to go before the Supreme Court to make a ruling, because ammunition and firearms are one and the same. You cannot have one without the other. Otherwise, they are both two essentially inert objects. And the anti-gunners know it. They realize that an integral part of the gun, being like, say, a firing pin or something, well, you can't really regulate that. So, how about the bullets? Oh, yeah, let's do that. Let's take the rounds, the ammo. Let's get rid of that. That's what happened with AB 962 in California, which I have a story on later. So, and that's what they're doing in Switzerland now. In Switzerland, it's happening by the socialist minority. Imagine that. Why do the socialist minority want to disarm the populace of Switzerland? So they can take over. You cannot take over an armed, trained society. You can't do it. I don't care what you've got. Eventually, as you go through and you get a few of the people here and there, the rest start to get backed up together. And they're in a big circle with their backs together, and they fight moving outwards. And a huge band of armed citizenry. What's going away in Switzerland? This is the backdoor method of disarming citizens, and it's very effective, taking away their ammo. Continuing. The ban also applies to the male citizens who make up Switzerland's time-honored citizens militia. Even they will be required to keep their ammo at approved government facilities. The fact that a leftist minority group was able to convince a majority of representatives in the Swiss Federal Assembly to approve the measure is considered a major victory for socialism and the push to strip individual citizens of the right to keep and bear arms. Well, have you heard that before? In a stunning example of what leftists can do when citizens are not paying attention, the socialist ban on ammunition in the homes of the Swiss people should be a stark lesson for U.S. citizens who wish to preserve the right to keep and bear arms and prevent them from doing the same ammunition restrictions here in the U.S. California. Anti-gun groups do not have to register or confiscate firearms to win the battle. They just need to try to take away your ammo. Rather, the growing modus operandi in the gun control movement is to render a constitutional right null, void, and useless by implementing legislation aimed at things such as ammunition rather than the actual guns themselves. Within the U.S., the anti-gun movement does not even have to introduce legislation. A mere executive order by an administration in the 1990s has been all it takes for a massive assault to ensue on gun shops, gun manufacturers, and other facets of the gun industry to begin to gradually rob the citizens of their right to keep and bear arms. This is presently being accomplished by a rogue arm of the Department of Justice, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, which has succeeded in shutting down 80% of the gun stores and gun and ammunition manufacturers within the U.S. Now, I'm reading that out of a star. I'm not so sure I believe that 80% deal. I know that a lot of people that used to have federal firearms licenses had them out of their homes and used them essentially to get their own stuff cheap, free, and easy, and didn't really sell many guns unless it was to friends and buddies here and there. Most of them are gone. The prevailing wisdom, similar to what we find in Switzerland, is to attack gun ownership by focusing on various facets of the gun and ammo industry rather than to directly attack the citizens' guns. This effectively renders useless any supposed right to own, possess, and use a firearm without addressing the firearms themselves at all, a perfect example of disarming citizens using the backdoor method. Switzerland has been the last bastion of real gun rights in Europe. Now even the Swiss have fallen to the sly and seductive ways of the socialist anti-gun movement. And what's happening when it comes to crime in Europe? What's happening there? And we had a mass shooting in Germany. So what did they do? They further restricted already restricted gun rights. We have basically no guns, for the most part, in jolly old England. And if you were to even defend yourself, you would be the one being arrested. So it almost makes honest citizens into a crime-on-crime sort of a deal. Defending yourself makes you a criminal. If you report it, you're going to get busted. So that means that you'd have to defend yourself and not report it. That now becomes crime-on-crime. That makes it so that unless you become a victim, which some people are just not willing to do, if you do defend yourself, you better keep quiet about it. And now you are amongst the same criminal element that brought violence to you. You've just joined them. Because the law doesn't allow for honest, law-abiding people to defend themselves. It's illegal. You heard the story that I read about a month ago about a mother and her handicapped daughter having been so berated and mentally tortured by a group of street thugs for years that, and the police were doing nothing about it, absolutely nothing about it. So to escape the tyranny of this street gang, the mother put her daughter in the car, put herself in the car, doused the car in gasoline, or petrol, as they call it there, and lit it on fire, and committed a kind of a double suicide, or you might look at it as a double homicide. She killed herself and her daughter in a burning vehicle to get away from a street gang that was terrorizing them for years in their own neighborhood, in their own home. Well, not in my neighborhood. That wouldn't go down. That wouldn't go down at all, not in my neighborhood. I wouldn't tolerate it. As a matter of fact, I live in a cul-de-sac of about 8 or 10 homes. And I actually stopped a lady who I'd seen driving down to the end of the block. I live about in the middle of the block. Driving down to the end and turning around. Driving down to the end and turning around. I'd seen her do this every couple of weeks for about, a month or so. So on the third trip, I stopped her, asked her who she was, what her business was doing there. And I'll tell you the story, actually, after the break. It's pretty interesting. Anyhow, since this stop, even though the woman has a reason to be there, I haven't seen her much anymore. But I'll tell you the story after the break. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, live, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
Okay, so I noticed every couple of weeks this lady in this red SUV driving up the street slowly, pausing in front of some houses, looked like she's taking some notes. So I wasn't in a position to stop her the first time I saw her. I wasn't in a position to stop her the second time I saw her. But the third time I saw her, I was definitely in a position to stop her. So she goes to the end of the street, she stops, I stop her. She goes to the end of the street, turned around, I stop her in front of my house. And I said, "Who are you? What are you doing?" And she said, "I work for Terra West, also known as Terror West. They happen to be the company who was hired by the Homeowners Association to actually look for, you know, violations of the CCNRs." And I said, "Let me ask you again. Who are you and what are you doing here?" "I work for Terra West." I said, "All right, we're having an impasse. I want to know your name and I want to know what business you have on this street. Because you do not live here. You do not own a home here. You're not a guest of anybody who lives on this street. It's a cul-de-sac that does not have an outdoor. There's only one way in, and it's the same way out. And quite honestly, I'm seeing you driving around, and it looks like you're casing this neighborhood, and I'll be damned if that's going to go down." So she gives me her name, and she tells me that she's looking for violations for CCNRs, making sure everybody's up to par, however she put it. So I asked her supervisor's name or supervisor's phone number. So right then and there, I take out my cell phone, I call the number, I ask for this person, the supervisor's name. And I said, "Do you have a person by the name of blah, blah, blah," whatever this lady's name was. "Yes." "Is there a problem?" I said, "Just hold on a moment. Where is this person supposed to be and what are they supposed to be doing?" She tells me where she's supposed to be, what she's supposed to be doing. I said, "Okay, fine. Is there a problem?" "No, I just want to make sure because it looks like this same person is casing my neighborhood." Oh, no, sir. No, this is what the homeowner, okay, blah. Thank you. Goodbye." So I let her know. I said, "Okay, you can go now." And she was mortified. I said, "Consider me neighborhood watch, and I'm watching you." So needless to say, a couple of times I've been out in my front yard doing one thing or another, and I see this SUV start to turn onto my street. They notice me because the street, it kind of has a tiny curve in it, so when I'm in my front yard as you turn on, you could actually see me out there. So she sees me, and then the vehicle makes a course correction back onto the street it was trying to come off of. So anyhow, that's the way I tend to work things in my neighborhood. Same thing with an alarm guy that was walking around. I live in a golf course subdivision, or I should say a golf course community, and I moved from one subdivision to another subdivision about 3 years ago, a little less than 3 years ago. And in my last one, some guy walking around taking notes, going from house to house, making phone calls. So I stopped him to find out what the deal was. As it turns out, he was on the up and up, some punk kid that when I started questioning him, he started giving me static. So I got right up in his face with a finger and I said, "Listen, boy, you're in my neighborhood and it looks like you're casing the joint and you're not going friggin' anywhere until I can determine that you're not casing the neighborhood. I don't care how long it takes. And if I got to call the county sheriffs out here to hold your ass, that's exactly what's going to go down. If you don't want them here, then you better stand there quietly and answer only the questions I asked without an attitude. Do you understand where I'm coming from?" And this punk kid was, yes, sir. So as it turns out, I ended up, pardon me, getting his supervisor on the phone asking if he knew who this person was, what they looked like, where they were supposed to be, how they were supposed to be doing their job and all like that, and everything cleared out. So when I was done, I said, "Okay, checks out." He said, "Can I go now?" I said, "Yes." He says, "Am I allowed to be on your street?" And I said, "Look, kid, don't get smart with me." I said, "You see all of these streets around here? These streets are private streets. They are not owned by the county. That big road that you took coming in here, that's owned by the county. Everything in here is private property. And I, as a resident of these private property areas, if you haven't been specifically invited here or live here, have the legal authority to trespass you off of this entire subdivision. So don't get smart with me. Go about your day. And by the way, I already have an alarm with your company." So anyhow, that's kind of the way I handle my neighborhood stuff. I get out there and I find out what's going on if people don't look like they're supposed to be there, if they look a little bit shady about what they're doing. I have no interest whatsoever in having my place or any of my neighbors' places burglarized. There are two houses on my block that have absentee owners. Both of these guys have them as kind of vacation homes for when they come here and do different things. One of them comes out here and shoots and, you know, hangs out in Vegas and does stuff. The other guy, there's a racetrack close and he hangs out there. And it's kind of funny because neither of these guys know each other, but they both live, they live probably about 10 miles apart in Southern California. One of the guys actually bought the house on the block simply because I lived across the street, like kind of kitty corner from the guy. He bought his house because he knew I lived on the street and the way I was. So, he's very comfortable leaving his house empty for weeks at a time. Anyhow, we're going to talk a little bit about this, AB 962 in California when we come back in the NRA's response, so stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
California AB 962 becomes a constitutional issue, a U.S. constitutional issue, when you look at it like this. That is the bill that as of February 2011, will severely restrict handgun ammunition in the state of California to the tune of 50 rounds per month. And the only way you can get it is to go to an authorized handgun ammunition dealer, buy it, show state-issued ID, and give thumbprints. Those thumbprints will later go to the police department to check and verify. And if you bought ammo at a different gun retailer less than 30 days ago, they'll come after you. If you're not supposed to buy ammo, they'll come after you. And quite honestly, I don't know if it's by caliber or what. Let's say that you've got a 9mm, a 40, and a 45. Are you allowed to buy 50 rounds of each one each month? Or 50 rounds, period. You can buy 9mm today, but not until the next quarter. Because in 30 days, you can go get some 40. 30 days after that, you can go get some 45. I mean, if you hit it every 30 days on the nose, you can buy as much as 600 rounds a year. That's it. And again, I don't know if it's a difference with caliber. I really don't. But the deal is, if that's the deal, you can pretty easily show from gun training experts who are pro-gun people, unless you get some anti-gunner shill who says, oh, I'm a certified instructor. Okay. You know what I gotta tell you? It really doesn't take much to become a certified instructor. Like a certified NRA instructor, it really doesn't take that much. But to actually put it to use and be a qualified instructor, that's the difference. I mean, I am certified in several areas. I'm qualified in many more. Meaning that I haven't bothered going to get some form of certification to be able to teach this or that or the other. Because I have a general set of certifications that, quite honestly, you don't even really need to train, as long as you know what you're doing. It's a good idea, though. But just realize, the certifications don't mean anything. The certifications don't make you qualified. Okay? They make you certified, not qualified. All right? Because somebody went to bartending school doesn't mean that they're going to be a good bartender compared to somebody who never went to bartending school but has worked as a bartender for the last decade or so. All right? So just because you got some certification doesn't make you qualified. Anyhow, it's pretty easy to show. Look, 50 rounds a month is not enough ammunition to get somebody up to speed to where they can actually be able to defend themselves with a gun. In this case, a handgun. Or even a shoulder-mounted carbine that fires a handgun round. 50 rounds a month is not enough to get somebody trained up. It's also not sufficient to keep somebody who's already got a reasonable level of training up to speed. It's just not enough. If you've got the skills, real life got the skills, and you do a fair amount of dry practice, you might be able to maintain. It may be between 100 and 200 rounds a month. Maybe. You might be able to maintain. However, your skills will eventually begin to degrade if you don't practice enough. And you can get a lot of stuff done dry, but you have to have some live rounds. Because live rounds print on paper and show actually where you're hitting. And in addition, offer recoil. They offer the opportunity for a little extra gun handling with live ammo. And potentially some malfunction clearances if you have issues with the gun. All right? So 50 rounds a month is not enough. So essentially, what they've done now, as a constitutional issue, as I see it, as Bill Karn sees it, if you have the right to keep and bear arms, that's encompassing of being able to use them and have a skill level with them. It goes without saying. Again, the Bill of Rights are not the only rights we have. It's just merely a top 10 list. And the 10th Amendment shows that. Okay? Remember the nifty old 10th Amendment? It says the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. So that basically means that all of the Bill of Rights is merely a top 10 list. That's it. It's not all of them. Just top 10. You got the Forbes 500, guys. They also have the Forbes 50. Well, there's another 450 behind it. There's a lot more on the Forbes list. Forbes watches a lot of things. There's a lot of rights out there. So if they're going to restrict this ammunition to where people cannot develop the skill or maintain a skill level because of the severe rationing of ammunition, that becomes a federal constitutional issue in my mind. So about the NRA. NRA and its supporters are promising to fight Assemblyman Kevin DeLeon, his AB 962, the bill recently signed by Schwarzenegger that requires stricter control over purchase of handgun ammunition, bans all internet ammunition sales, blah, blah, blah. And because Schwarzenegger vetoed the same bill just a year ago, gun groups were surprised that he actually signed this one. "We think it's a devastating mistake," says Sam Paredes, executive director of Gun Owners of California, as he told the LA Times. The group represents roughly 30,000 gun owners throughout the state. Ammunition buyers are going to be treated like registered sex offenders now. He's absolutely right. The bill, which will go into effect on February 11th, 2011, requires that purchasers of handgun ammunition be fingerprinted and registered at the time of purchase. Retailers must then maintain these records and make them available for inspection by the Department of Justice. Backed by the NRA and the California Rifle and Pistol Association, Assemblyman Kurt Hagman, who's a Republican out of Chino Hills, California, has revised his AB 373 to repeal AB 962. In a press release, Hagman claimed that AB 962 was an attack on the Second Amendment. Well, duh! The laundry list of new requirements in AB 962 treats law-abiding citizens like criminals, Hagman says. The only people this bill will affect are those already following the law. My bill will ensure that California's responsible gun owners are not punished by this excessive regulation from Sacramento. The NRA and CRPA are distributing a letter in support of the repeal, which is set to be introduced to the California legislature in January. Again, I believe the single biggest problem in California, the single biggest issue, is that the legislature is a full-time job. We got a job up in Sacramento, man. It's a full-time gig. These people have, if they're not already from the Sacramento area or region, they have second homes there. And, of course, those homes have some sort of subsidy that the state pays for because, you know, you're from San Diego, you're from L.A., you're from Chino, you're from Ridgecrest, whatever. You need to be able to stay up here because we are full-time deals, so we're going to subsidize you having to maintain a separate residence up here. Now, in Nevada, they meet for 120 days every other year. You get elected to the assembly in Nevada. You serve for 120 days, and that's it, because the terms are only for 2 years. You serve for that 120 days, you go home, you're done. Unless the governor calls a special session, but you're done. You serve all of that campaigning and all of that stuff is to sit for 120 days. The state senate is for 4 years, so you get to do it for 240 days. 120 days, and in 2 years, another 120 days, and you're done. Okay? Unless, again, of course, the governor calls a special session. So the governor doesn't really do much anyhow. I mean, in Nevada, there's not really a whole bunch to govern. They're not even in, the governor isn't even in Carson City, isn't even at the governor's mansion, generally, unless the legislature's in session, which happens every other year. The rest of the time, those buildings are nearly vacant. There's just nothing going on. California needs to go back to that. When Schwarzenegger was running for his first election during the recall of Gray Davis, Schwarzenegger said one of his goals was to return the California legislature back to a part-time gig. He wasn't able to do it. And quite honestly, all of his conservative rhetoric during his campaign, and for about the first year while he was in, maybe year and a half that he was in office, he tried to be a reasonable Republican. Then he became a very moderate Republican, and then all that's washed away. All he does is bow to everybody else. Oh, yes, big smile, big goofy tooth smile, yeah, yeah. Good job, dude. Good job. You have failed as governor of California. I hope that Planet Hollywood is successful. I understand that Planet Hollywood Hotel here on the Las Vegas Strip is losing money hand over fist, and another property is looking to, another entity, gaming entity, is looking to buy it out. So I don't know what you're going to do. I mean, are you going to try to go back to film? You're kind of old and falling apart. Since you've been gone, other people have filled in. I don't know how marketable you are. You know, maybe you could get into Body by Arnold and try to put Jake out of business. I don't know. But the thing is, you failed as a governor. You've just flat out failed. All of the different things that you have signed into law, Governor Schwarzenegger, everything that you have signed into law that is restricted or repealed or outright trampled on the rights of Californians is directly a result of you. The legislature passes these things, passes these measures, but they don't become law until you sign them into law. And quite honestly, your veto stamp hasn't been used anywhere near enough. You should be vetoing all kinds of garbage and sending a message to the legislatures. If the legislators want to spend their full time of all their life passing all of these garbage-ass laws in California, if you were to veto a whole bunch of them and say, look, you know, you guys may as well go back to part-time, because you're wasting your time with all that. I'm vetoing things left and right and left and right. And the stuff that's actually going to pass, actually proper, as I see actually constitutional, that I'll sign, because I won't sign anything if it's not constitutional, could be done about 90 days a year. Okay, so why don't we just meet up here in Sacramento every spring for 90 days and handle the state's business? Or if you want, we could do it 45 days in the spring, 45 days in the fall. Every 6 months we get together. We certainly don't need to have these knee-jerk bills, because I'm vetoing them left and right and left and right. I'm reviewing these things. I'm having my legal department review these things. And there's so many constitutional issues, so many rights violations coming through. I am vetoing things left and right. So we're all wasting our time, and we're wasting the money of the taxpayers. We're wasting the money in the public funds, which were upside down by, you know, $400 billion, whatever it is in California, whatever ridiculous amount that they are bankrupt and in the hole over. Let's save them some money and let's do the right thing. That's a way to get the legislature to go back to part-time. You guys aren't getting anything through. You're spinning your wheels. Your pills that are ridiculous and unconstitutional are not going to get signed. They're going to get vetoed. So you're either going to spend all of your time trying to override these vetoes, or you don't have the votes to do that, and you're going to go back to something else and try to manipulate it some other way. You're just wasting time. That would be my plan if I were governor of California. That would be my plan to get these boneheads back to a part-time deal. If you can't handle the business of a state in 90 days a year, be it one 90-day session or two 45-day sessions, even if it's 120 days a year, which is a third of the year, is 60 days in the spring, 60 days in the fall, you know, there's a 4 month break in between each of these, you know, then maybe. But that even seems incredibly excessive to me. Now, 30 days in the spring, 30 days in the fall, you should be able to get stuff done in just about any state. You meet for a month. That way only the truly important things get looked at. The garbage bills don't get looked at. And if the legislators bring up nothing but special interest related things in such a short period of time, if they only have 30 days to do work, and they bring up all the special interest stuff to try to repay the people that they owe for helping them get into office, well, the citizens of California are going to notice that. Like, look, hold on. We got problems with irrigation and water. We got issues with power. We got issues with electricity. We've got issues with too high of taxes, too sorry education. We've got all these issues which are real life important. And you're talking about a fish which is in an aqueduct. You're talking about a plant that grows to about 16 inches high that is found so far off a beaten path that you want to pass some sort of legislation over a plant, a small bush? No. We need to talk about the regular, good, honest-to-God stuff that's going to keep this state going. So they wouldn't be able to get away with all the special interest garbage. Now, full-time, do whatever they want. They probably spend more time in California trying to pass laws than they do at the federal level concerning all 50 states. And, of course, we know how that goes, right? That's all special interest stuff. They have time to look at gun control. They have time now to look at ammunition bans, thanks to AB 962. So in California, all those gun rights are vanishing. Those of you who are my friends and listeners in California, you better get off your quiet asses and start making a lot of intellectual noise. If you start coming across like Bubba in the back of a pickup, bearded Harry with his dogs, his buddies, and his case full of beer, his cooler full of beer, and that's the way you shoot, sit down and shut up. They don't need to hear you. If you're articulate, you're a gun owner, you'd better fight for your rights. I've said it before, I'll say it again. I've had people battle with me and say, you know, defending your rights is expensive and it takes time. Freedom isn't free. It's not free of your time. It's not free of your expense. And in California, guys, it's about to leave on February 11th, 2011. Unless you stand up and get this thing repealed. Get on it. Otherwise, I've got no sympathy for you. I don't live there. Stay tuned. More to come, guys. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
So I gave you an assignment a couple of weeks ago, and I said, this weekend or next, somebody's going to break into your house and try to take control of you and anybody who lives in your household, if you live other than alone. And what's your plan? Are you ready? Do you have things worked out? And that doesn't mean just loading a gun and leaving it there so your three-year-old can come over and goof with it. Because that's not a plan for your house. Now, in my house, my plan is different now than it was, say, 5 years ago. Because I don't have little toddlers running around in my house anymore. So my plan, my preparedness has been altered. Has everybody done that? If not, you know, I got to tell you, I really don't have a bunch of sympathy for somebody that doesn't have a spare tire in their car. They're not expecting to get a flat. But if you're not prepared in case one comes, that's just standard modus of being able to be ready for something to come down. You know? If you're driving around and you get a flat, and you don't have a spare or one of those little donuts or something like that, then I've got no sympathy for you when you get a flat tire and you can't do anything about it. None. No sympathy. And as harsh as it may sound, if you're not prepared for somebody to bust into your house, some bad guy turd that doesn't give a damn about you or anybody else in your home, and you're not prepared to defend yourself from something like that, then I don't have a bunch of sympathy for you. You should be prepared. And that doesn't mean just having a gun, just having the right ammunition for it, but also knowing how to use it. If you're not going to dedicate yourself to that, then you're leaving yourself to chance that the tire won't blow, to chance that the wiring wherever you live is good and you're not going to have a fire and burn to death in bed, rather than having a fire extinguisher, having an escape plan in case there is fire, having a setup of communication with the other residents of your household. These are essential things for not living, but for surviving. You've got to survive to be able to live. It's like in a race. To be able to finish first, you must finish. can't drive like a wild man and abuse your equipment and your competitors. You have to be able to finish first before you can, you have to be able to first finish before you can finish first. You have to be prepared for things such as fires or bad guys or flat tires in order to be able to overcome them, provided that unscheduled sort of problem surprises you and you're prepared for it. Be ready. Be prepared. Have your stuff together.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Have a great afternoon, guys. I'll be back tomorrow.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.